Thank you for listening to a Midland Free Methodist podcast. In this week's message, Pastor Dave announces he will be moving to Kansas.
Okay. How's everybody doing? Yeah? Seriously? So, I just got to tell you of a couple comments, and I didn't get permission to do this, but I'm going to do it anyhow. So far, one of my favorite comments of the day comes from Bob. Bob came up to me and he said, "I'm just going to go fishing." That's what Peter did. I'm going fishing. So I just thought that was an interesting comment. I want to tell you about our journey. We talked about this with the pastor's cabinet and even with the board and delegates and as we went through discussing where we are with all of this, we thought it'd be good just to tell you the story and the ministry journey. It is a journey. It's a journey that I've committed to, that we've committed to. It's a journey that we're on. So I thought, let's just take some time this morning and let me tell you the story. It started in Hannibal, Missouri when I was born in 19. Let's not go back quite that far. There's been something in our heart for a long time. When I started the journey in ministry, it came kind of as a surprise. And I'm going to tell parts of this story, and some of you that have been part of our journey for a long time, they're going to be repeat stories. But when we got married at the age of, both of us were 12, when we got married and we moved to Florida and came back from Florida and back into Michigan. We were always involved in ministry. We never got out of ministry. When we moved to Florida, my first job in Florida as a married person, we were managing a small Christian bookstore, and the deal was the bookstore owner was also planting a Wesleyan church, and the deal was you can manage our Christian bookstore and we want you to be the youth pastor at our Wesleyan church at the same time. So from the time that we've come together, we have always been in ministry. That's just always happened. Usually I was doing other jobs, which included things like selling books, selling shoes, selling vacuums, selling hamburgers. I have been at just about any job that you can be at. And while I was doing that, we were always together in ministry. Happened when we were, I worked at Family Life Radio for a while. I was the overnight announcer because that was back when Family Life Radio, those of you can remember back when Family Life Radio, Sandy Patty, which already just eliminated half of the people in this room. Sandy Patty's newest album had three songs on it we could play. The rest of them had too much rhythm in them. Okay, that was Family Life Radio. Had a friend that was working with me through the overnight shift, and we were just talking, and he looked at me and he said, "Dave, when are you going to bite the bullet and just go into ministry?" And I said, I'm in ministry. And he said, "No, you know what I'm talking about. When are you going to go into ministry?" And thought about it for a second, and I thought of the safest way to explain it to him what I was thinking. I will go into ministry when I can work with my dad. If I could get a staff position with my dad, then I'd go into ministry. That's a safe thing to say because my dad pastors a small church in Sault Ste. Marie. They're not hiring. You know, that's a safe thing to say. 2 weeks later, my dad calls me. Dave, they want me to put on a youth pastor. What do you think about moving to Sault Ste. Marie? Now what do you do? I have a high school diploma at this point. And that was the safest place to work because I trust my dad and my dad trusts me. So I did that for 3 years. It was in that time, matter of fact, just shortly after we moved to Sault Ste. Marie, now that I think of it, all of this could be my dad's fault. It was shortly after we moved to Sault Ste. Marie that something wasn't going right with me physically. And we started the process of diagnosis to find out that I had multiple sclerosis. That didn't make any sense to me. I was one of those guys that through high school, you know, many of you have, even those of you who were raised in the church, through high school, you went through that time where you decided you had to go out and try and do everything just for the sake of, you know, sowing whatever it is you're supposed to sow. I didn't go through that. I mean, I'm certainly not a flawless kid. I did plenty of goofy things in life, but like I didn't go through that time where I want to bail on God or where I want to experience things that I was raised in the church. I saw the results of a lot of those things. I didn't need to experiment with a lot of stuff. And so now, here I am with a wife and two children, and I have answered, quote-unquote, the call. Things fit. It just makes sense. I'm doing what God called me to do. And in the middle of that, I'm visiting doctors and learning about things that I have never learned about before. It was in that time when we didn't know yet what the diagnosis was. I wasn't feeling well at all. Went upstairs in my parents' home, laid down to take a nap, had a nap. I have no idea how long I was asleep. And in my nap, in that time, I had the most vivid dream that I've ever had in my life. I still remember it like it was yesterday. And I won't go into the full story of the dream. It's just it's this amazing picture of this young man that ends up presenting the things that represent his life to God. And he presents these things to God, and he expects God to be really happy and really pleased with the fact that I have just presented all these things that represent my life. Look at, here's a list of the things that I didn't do. Here's the list of the things that I did do that were good to do. Here's a list of all the wonderful things that I've done and the people that I smiled at that didn't deserve it and the people that I forgave that I really didn't want to. And, you know, here's my good stuff. I even made maybe even a list of some of the small little things that I just trust God's grace for. You know, I didn't forgive that person and I was mean to that person and forgive me for. And in presenting this gift to God, instead of God being pleased, God was really unhappy. And he knew God was unhappy because he reached forward and he felt on his hand a big teardrop as God's displeasure was evident. I mean, this is my life, and you're not happy. I remember him standing back, and he was going to leave, and he turned around before he left the throne room of God, and he cried out as loudly as he could, "What do you want from me? I've given you everything. What do you want?" And the simple reply was, "Give me your life." And I woke up. And I woke up with that phrase of "give me your life" resounding in my spirit. Because when I give my life to Christ, it is a life that is given regardless. It's not given conditionally. When I give my life to Christ, it isn't given to him. When I give him my promise to serve him and follow him, it isn't given to him as long as. It isn't given to him with any conditions. When I give my life to Christ, when I commit to follow him, when I commit to minister to him, and by the way, we're all doing that. Even people that aren't paid to minister are ministers. We're all doing that. And so often, and how we've set it up, we've done it almost conditionally. As long as this happens or this happens, I'll follow. As long as that literally is for me the foundational story of ministry for me. It serves that moment serves as this constant reminder of what ministry is. It is an example of giving God all of me, no matter what. The journey is amazing how it happened. Dwight Weber used to be the pastor of this church. He was the pastor that I worked under. Dwight Weber came up to the Upper Peninsula to go to a concert in some little campground off west of Sault Ste. Marie. And we bumped into Dwight at that concert. And my parents were there, and we decided, let's invite the Webbers over to Mom and Dad's house after the concert. And so we invited them over to play games after the concert. And Dwight was telling Julie, I found this out afterwards, he was telling his wife Julie, on the way to Sault Ste. Marie, you see, they, Midland Church, had just decided that they were going to hire their first staff person. And Dwight didn't know who that was going to be yet. And he and I kind of had this neat connection, just a little bit that we had talked. And so he's driving back to Sault Ste. Marie to get together with us to play games. And he looked at his wife and said, Julie, wouldn't it be cool if Dave Kessler was the guy that we were supposed to hire? And he said, this is really awkward because I'm going back to his dad's house, who he happens to be employed by right now. I mean, it's kind of awkward to look at Dave in the middle of the game and say, hey, do you want to leave your dad's church and come work with me? You know, that would kind of be awkward. So what he said was, if we can get a loan, if I can get him a loan, I'm going to consider that a sign and I'm going to talk to him about coming to the church. So we sat there playing games for a little while. We didn't have the game that we wanted. I don't remember which game it was. We didn't have the game that we wanted, so I looked at Dwight and said, Dwight, I know where it is. It's just right down the road. We lent it to a friend. Give me a ride, and you and I can go pick it up. So Dwight and I got a loan in the car that evening to go pick up a game just a few blocks away, which should have taken in the area of 75 seconds. About 35 minutes later, Dwight and I had this neat conversation about what God might be doing. The amazing thing about that is just a couple weeks before that, I remember walking home from church with my wife, and we both looked at each other and said, something's up. God's doing something. I don't know what it is, but God's doing something. So we looked at coming to Midland for the first time, which is a pretty scary thing to do after you've just been diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. Neat part of the story is I was part-time at the church, and I was also part-time at JCPenney. I worked in the basement of the room doing maintenance and things like that. Worked 20 hours a week, 20 to 25 hours a week at JCPenney, and had full benefits, including insurance. It's the weirdest thing. They liked me. We ended up coming to Midland as a staff person, just trusting and following the Lord, and knowing that what He has will always include Him, you know. In the midst of all of the questions, what God has will always include Him. We were at Midland for about 3 years, and Dwight Weber came into my office and said, hey, Dave, you've been with us 3 years now. Have you ever thought about biting the bullet and going to college? By the way, The whole phrase, if you ever come to me and say, Dave, have you ever thought about biting the bullet? Not a real favorite phrase of mine. It just kind of comes up at really weird times. Have you ever thought about biting the bullet and going to college? I said, yeah, I thought about it, but I don't see how it's possible. I mean, let's face it, it costs a lot of money even just to figure out what you're going to do or where you're going to go or to move or something like that. And I don't see how that's possible. 2 weeks later, a guy came into my office and said, Pastor Dave, my wife passed away, and or my mother passed away, and I'm closing off her estate, and the Lord told me that I was supposed to give you this, and he handed me a $1,000 check. He said, I don't know what you're supposed to do with it, but I just know that God said that you're supposed to use that for something. So I went and started looking at colleges. Spent some time looking at what was available for a married couple with two children. And we ended up at Indiana Wesleyan. And spent 3 years or so at Indiana Wesleyan getting my degree there in Christian ministries. Amazing stories of what happened in that journey. The first house that we had at Marion, it was really kind of funny because it was more money that we were going to rent it. And I'm talking to the guy on the phone, and I told him it's a little more money than what we were planning on based on what I'm expecting as far as a budget. I don't know as though we could do that. And I kid you not, direct quote, the guy said to me, well, how about if I lower the rent? Yeah, okay, I guess that would work. We did 4 years of college and crammed it all in through some busy summers and did that in about 3.5 years and walked out with a $1,000 debt. 4 years of college. That was God's blessings through that were just absolutely amazing. And then we didn't know where we were going to go. Now what? My background was Wesleyan, so my assumption was I'm going to go back to the Wesleyan church, go back to North Michigan. And we went to a few different churches, and a few different churches even invited us to come, and nothing felt right. And then I got a call from Dwight Weber again. Hey, Dave, what do you think about coming back to Midland? I don't know, Dwight. I just, my sense is that God's doing something different. And he said, here's the scoop. My gift is administration, and your gift is more communication and interaction with people. So what I'm going to do, I would like to bring you back to Midland as a staff member, and I'm going to do the administration, and you're going to do 70% of the teaching and preaching and 70% of people care. Your base, I'm going to be the senior pastor, but it's going to look like you are. He said, no, everybody has told me that this is crazy. My superintendent, everybody tells me you can't do this, but I think we can do this, Dave. We can do this. How about you come back? And so we ended up back in Midland. It's amazing, amazing story how that worked out. That year that we came back as a staff member was a wonderful year, and I knew in my spirit that something was missing. I knew in my spirit that this was good, and I love the people and everything, and we like being here, but something's missing. This is not quite what I'm designed to do. Something happened in my educational journey, and I fell in love with the campus. I fell in love with the church ministry and the campus together. I thought that was fascinating. And I wrote in my journal one day, Lord, I don't understand this. You've brought me back here, but I'm not doing what I'm supposed to be doing. I'm called to be a pastor. I'm called to guide people in a different way than what I'm able to do as a staff member. In order for anything to happen at Midland, what would have to happen is Dwight would need to find a church, because I'm not going to undercut him at all. There's no way I would do that. Dwight would need to find a position that truly fits his gifts. Dwight would need to support me in becoming the pastor, and the Free Methodist Church would have to risk trusting a young man that just got his college degree with a Wesleyan background with one of the coolest churches in the conference. I mean, those are pretty risky things. I don't remember how long it was. It was in the area of a week later that Dwight called me into his office and said, Dave, you'll never believe the call that I just got. I've just been offered a position as an administrative assistant at a church in Ohio, administrative pastor at a church in Ohio. And he said, Dave, I want to do it. It fits my gifts perfectly. I thought, well, that's interesting. And the next line was, Dave, I really think that you're the next person that should do this. I think you can take the church to the next level. I've kind of hit the ceiling, and I think you could take the church to the next level of ministry. And he said, so I'm going to call the superintendent, and I'm going to tell him that I really think you should be the person that keeps going. And I said, Dwight, let me go get my journal. I want to read you something. It was amazing to see God's hand through that. There were a couple other people that had to help the superintendent and the bishop know that Dave Kessler could handle this responsibility of Midland, even though this is the first church he would have ever pastored as a pastor. I found out that Anita Archer was one of them. Anita Archer went to the superintendent as they were looking at who's going to be appointed. And we operate under the appointment system. We don't elect pastors. The conference appoints them. Anita Archer went to the superintendent and pretty much chewed him out is what she did. You got to picture her just laying into the superintendent. No, that's not what she did. That's not what she did at all. But she said, we love Dave and we really think he should be our next pastor. And we have a guy he's in our second service, Bob Hockaday's on the committee that does some of the appointment stuff. He was only there, he only did it for a couple years. And he happened to be there the week that they were talking about whether or not Dave Kessler was going to be the next pastor. And they didn't think they should do that. One, because he was too young. He didn't have any experience as a pastor. And he didn't have a lot of background in the Free Methodist Church. And Bob Hockaday was in the meeting. And at the end of the meeting, he started talking. And he started, not pushing, but he started talking about the ministry and what's going on. And at the end of it, I was appointed in 1997. And I love this church. And it has been... it has been a beautiful thing. For those of you that have been here for a long time, it has been a beautiful thing for you to watch our children grow up. This church raised our children. I said that in one of our meetings, and somebody, I think it was, as a matter of fact, I think it was Anita that piped up and said, this church raised you. Yeah, you absolutely did. But there was something in my spirit that has just always been there that isn't dissatisfaction at all, but just a sense of, is there more that God has for me? Is there more? And I can't explain why somehow my heart has been attached to the educational process and what training ministers and training young people, what that does. I don't know why that happened or where that happened. Somewhere along the way, I got attached to that. I got to teach classes at the conference level for kids that were people that were second career kind of things, and they decided they wanted to be ministers. And I get to go and teach them history and polity of the Free Methodist Church, which sounds really boring, and I just get so geeked about that. I think that's the coolest class to teach. And I love helping people in that journey. There's something that just always draws me to that. And something about, I just knew that someday we'd end up in a situation where I'd be able to be in a campus setting where I'd be working with a church and at the same time working with students to have a call in their life who have answered that thing of God saying to them, give me your life, and not knowing how to live that out or how to apply that and how to be trained for that. That's wired within me. So we get done with this doctoral degree that I just finished. By the way, the Lord worked out the first degree so that I had $1,000 debt. The second degree, he had a beautiful little lady from the Free Methodist Church, she has passed now, who heard that I was getting my master's, and she decided that she wanted to pay for it. And so I walked out with my master's without any debt. God did the doctoral thing in a different way. And so I've been wondering, you know, since the first one that happened and the second one that happened, it really put me in a place where I was, why did I do this? What is the point of this step of education? We were sitting at a lunch with our superintendent, and he had said something about McPherson Free Methodist Church at Central College being open, and my wife and I were both sitting there, and when we got back in the car after the meeting, Leah said to me, my heart just jumped when he said that. I said, yeah, I know, mine too. So we just looked really briefly. I just made one phone call to the bishop of the Free Methodist Church. And I said, Bishop, I just want to know, do you think that Dave and Leah would fit in that setting? And he said, Dave, I thought of you, and I wanted to call you, but I just talked to you about being a superintendent in the East Michigan Conference, and you told me you weren't leaving Midland. So I didn't think it would be any good. It would do me any good to call you about this. I said, Bishop, there's a big difference between going to a church and doing what you're called to do and being a superintendent. Trust me, I am not called to be a superintendent. Within a half hour of that conversation, the superintendent of that church, of that conference, was calling me. And we spent an hour and a half on the phone. And I told him about Midland. I told him about you. About the atmosphere of being able to just be who you are and following Christ and dealing with life together. And we've dealt with a lot of life together. I told them about getting to the place where it took me 20 years to get to the place where I had the nerve to actually even say something about, what if we took the platform out, you know? We talked about a lot of the changes that we've gone through. And we got done with the conversation, and he said, Dave, do you think the Lord would let you do that again? Because I have a church that needs that. Can you do that again? I said, it wasn't me, it was God. So that's my journey. That's my journey of stopping and considering. Considering what the Lord has and why and when. And all with that foundation of I've given my life and my call to Christ. I went to an interview one of those weeks that we were gone. We went to an interview at the church at McPherson, Kansas. And once again in the interview they asked me to describe Midland, and so I described Midland to them, and I told them about you. And somebody said, why would you leave? And I said, that is a good question. And it's one that I don't have a real good answer for. My wife told me early in the process, Dave, you should call somebody and talk to somebody that's gone through this. And I said, I don't know of anybody that has been so in love with a group of people that have left. I don't know if you're aware of this. Pastors usually leave because they want to or the church wants them to. Like those two things kind of happen. I don't know who to call to talk to about this. This is a unique journey. And I ended up telling them when they asked me that, there's just a sense that I have a call on my life. There's something that God is calling me to, and we've made a pattern, and it hasn't always been easy, and it hasn't always made sense, but we've made a pattern when we get a sense from the Lord, we are willing to follow. We will follow. So, I look at the word. I'm going through in my regular reading schedule of being in the Word, and I happen to have just gone through the book of Joshua. Joshua's the story when this unbelievable change is taking place, where God's people have been delivered from Egypt and they came to the edge of the promised land and they rebelled, and now they're back to the edge of the promised land again. And Moses has passed away, and Joshua is having the baton handed to him. And they're told that they're to cross the Jordan River, and the priests are going to stand in the Jordan River with the Ark of the Covenant, and they're to follow the priests. And then they are to follow the ark. And then there's this line in the third chapter of the book of Joshua. You are to follow the ark because you have never gone this way before. I love that line. And I became aware of something. My life is filled, and your life is filled with moments that you have never been that way before. You've never done this before. Even those of you who are parents and you have children that you've raised, you're well aware of the fact that by the time you've gotten something figured out with maybe child number one, you know right well by the time child number two comes along, all of a sudden you are instantly a rookie again. Because they're different. Even if you have a job in one city and you transfer to a different city, you're aware of the fact that if you do the same job in two different places, you're aware of the fact that it's just different. I'm intimately aware of the fact that every experience that I have been experiencing is new. The dynamics are somehow different. And the question isn't whether or not we're going to face new things. We're always going to face new things. That's always going to happen. The question is, as I go through the new things, can I keep my eyes on the Christ that I am following? I mean, that's what the heart of this whole story is about. In order for them to enter the promised land, they had to follow the ark, which represented the presence of God, which says to them, you are always, no matter what in your situations, you are always to be somebody that is following the God that you trust and the God that loves you. And you're going to always be facing situations where you have never been there before. This is new. I don't know how to do this. I've never done this before. I was talking with the superintendent where we're going to be going, and he asked me a question, and I said to him, I have no idea. I don't even remember what his question is. I said, I have no idea. And he asked me another question, and I said, I don't know. And I finally said to him, sir, I've never done this before. I don't know how to do this. I don't know what protocol is on this. And to be honest with you, I really don't care a whole lot about protocol. What's a new thing? And the point is that somehow in that journey, as I'm crossing over to the new thing that God has for me, the point is, if I take my eyes for a moment off from the God who loves me and the call that he's placed on my life, I end up behaving in ways that are inconsistent with the God that has called me. You see, that's the point of following the ark, because it represented God's presence. And as long as it represented God's presence and I'm following the ark, that means that the people would know to be obedient to the God that they're following. They would know to keep their faith in that direction, in the presence of the ark. They would know that they would have to somehow adjust their lives to the God that they were following consistently, over and over and over, through this situation and through that situation. They'd have to keep their focus there. And what you have through the story of the Bible, especially what you see in the Old Testament with the children of Israel, is you find out that over and over and over again, they took their eyes off. And they compromised. And the promises that they made fell apart. Somehow, if I'm going to be the follower, I have to make sure that Christ is lifted high and that my eyes are on Him. Only Him. Only Him. So, that's where I am. That's where we are. We are all in a place where there are more unknowns than there are knowns. We just are there right now. And if that makes you nervous, trust me. I'm standing in that boat with you. Unknowns are unknowns. Do you know that it would be impossible to truly understand faith if you didn't experience the unknown? That's where faith grows. Paul wrote the Philippian church, and he said, "I can do all things through Christ who gives me strength." You know, it's a cool line. Do you remember the context of that? Because just before that, he has said, "I have learned to be content in every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether I can sleep or whether I can't sleep, whether things are going well or they're not going well. I've learned to be content in every situation. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me." That's where the verse fits. It fits right there at that place where we're about to follow. We're about to step off in faith, and there are more questions than there are answers. I'm going through things that are difficult and I don't understand. It's during that time that I can somehow muster within my being, because of the presence of Christ in me, I can muster the strength to continue to follow, to continue to keep Christ the main thing. I can do all things, like go into places where I've never been before. In order to do that, we've got to keep Christ in the center, don't we? Let's do this. I wanted to in this time, I wanted to in this service, as Eric and I were talking about it. I wanted to be honest and not pretend. And so that's why we just completely scrapped normally what we do in a service. We just set it aside and let's just talk together as family. That's what we are. So the sense is, okay, here's the story, here's the Dave story, here's what we're going through. But now, let's do that twist and put our eyes back on Christ together. Let's do that twist together where we keep our eyes focused where our eyes belong, and we hold on to faith. And we hold on to what God longs to do in our lives. And we know that beyond any shadow of a doubt, no matter where you are in your journey with Christ, beyond any shadow of a doubt, God has a step that he has orchestrated for you. He has this step that he's orchestrated just for you. Step of faith. And so I'm going to invite you with me as we close. We're going to worship, and I'm going to invite you with me to turn your eyes on Christ. I want you as a church, I love you. I want you to love us. I want you to miss us, because I'm going to miss you. Never follow Dave. We follow Christ. I do not follow Dwight Weber, who brought me here. I follow Christ. I do not follow my superintendent. I do not follow the bishop. I follow Jesus Christ. I follow his sacrifice that he's given for me, the life that was raised to life for me, and the fact that he ascended into heaven and has prepared a place for me. That's the Christ that I follow. And I will continue to do so. Stand with me, would you please? Let's turn our eyes on Christ. Let's turn our eyes on Christ and just worship him. Of what Christ does in calling someone to himself and working in that person's life and getting them through things that don't make any sense and drawing them close in times when he feels distant and in loving through times that it feels like there is no love. The point of that is so that when we receive and we respond to what God is doing, somehow that can be duplicated in another person's life. And so my call this morning just has to be, I have to end with where I started. I have to end with that moment of somebody looking up at God and finding themselves at that place in their life where they would say, what do you want from me? What more am I supposed to do? What else am I supposed to do? This is not what I expected. What do you want? See, the point of the duplication is that each of us can hear Christ speak into our life, give me your life. I don't want your sacrifice. I don't want you to try and be a better person. I don't want you to sit back and watch me bring blessings so that you can be happy. I want you to respond by giving me your life so that no matter what's going on in your world, my call on your life is still first. Give me your life. Lord God, may we be people that surrender and resurrender and resurrender ourselves to you. At this time, I would ask that you would grow the faith of a congregation and include me in that. Grow our faith. Lord, help us in this season to celebrate the blessing of your love. The evidence of your work, help us to celebrate that. Help us, Lord, to hold on tightly to faith. Help us, Lord, to be willing to respond to you during the hard times, during questions, during confusion, and during doubt. Help us to be able to respond to you. Jesus, help us to be able to give all of us to you. Would you empower us to do that? trust you. In Jesus' name. Amen. Amen. May the Lord bless us with awareness of his presence in the midst of questions. May the Lord bless us all with an awareness of his presence in the midst of questions. Like to talk or pray, I'd love to talk or pray with you, my friends. Let's watch and see what the Lord has for us.
I'm so